Melvin Hastings, Daryl, and Little D's out. I have a special guest here in the studio with me, Mr. Jerry Kilgore. How you doing, Jerry?
Doing great.
Cold?
Cold. It's cold tonight.
It was cold this morning, cold tonight, cold tomorrow, the next day, the next night.
Yep.
Couple of days. We're kind of sporting south, I guess. Every once in a while, we get these cold winters, and it's miserable. Makes us kind of a miserable person.
Yes, it does.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, Jerry?
Well, I'm an attorney. I practice here in Coleman with Josh O'Neill. He's my partner at O'Neill and Kilgo. We do a little bit of everything. One of the things that I handle in our office is our workers' compensation cases, Social Security disability, and then just pretty much anything else that comes through the door that we think we can handle.
That's pretty well. I think that's what all law offices are now. There's a few of them that still specializes in one or two things, but most of the time, everybody takes in a variety of different things. I think it makes you a well-rounded lawyer. But when you get down to Birmingham to deal with some of these guys, all they deal with defense work, like insurance defense or something, or there's some lawyers just deal with Social Security disability, and they couldn't even tell you nothing about the first criminal case, or they'll tell you right up, I don't know anything about it. And I don't do real estate stuff, so I can't tell you the first thing about doing a closing. That's kind of, I feel pathetic, but I've never done a closing and really have no interest in doing a closing. Really, all you do is just sign a bunch of documents. But yeah, I did the same thing, handle a lot of a variety of stuff. And the workers' compensation, I don't know if that's something we've talked that much about over this past year. That's something that's very important. I think we can discuss a little bit on it. And sometimes it and the Social Security intertwine. Some people are injured enough where maybe the injury itself causes them to be disabled where they can't work and they have to get Social Security benefits, or it may affect that compounded with other medical stuff they have that affects the Social Security benefit. You know, the Social Security, it becomes into play, and as you know, it's very important whenever if you got a work-related injury and if you are significantly injured and you're going to require Medicare or you're going to get Social Security benefits, you better make sure that you have an attorney to help guide you through the process, because you can get in a mess real fast. I mean, I wonder how many people that's went out there and accepted some little bit of a settlement of a few thousand dollars on a work-related injury, and for whatever reason they can't go back to work. They try to draw the Social Security benefits just to find out that all of that money offsets.
Oh, yeah. There's a lots of different different problems you can run into when you got both of those things at play, and when you got Medicare that's entitled to a certain amount of money, and you've got Social Security that's entitled to offset based on your workers' comp award. And we've handled quite a few cases where we've had to, it ends up being a big math problem to, yes, to figure out what's the optimal number to protect the person's benefits, to protect their insurance.
Yes.
Usually it ends up meaning we get a lower fee, but
yes,
it's what you got to do.
Yeah. Sometimes, when you get someone that's like, maybe the injury didn't cause them to be disabled, but it contributed to them being disabled. They've got high blood pressure and diabetes and whatever other kind of ailments they got with them, and maybe had a prior shoulder surgeries and stuff, and now they've hurt their back and their leg or whatever else, and it fixes, and they're in a position now where they just can't earn a living. You know, they're totally disabled. They can't earn a living, and, the workers' compensation is going to pay you back your money that you're going to lose for the amount of money that you can earn. But, the insurance benefits, the medical insurance benefits and everything else, that gets to be a different thing. And this person gets on Medicare, and Medicare, they're not going to pay for an injury, or they want to be set. They want the money set aside, and they want some plan,
right,
to be repaid, reimbursed any money that they spend on anything that's work related injuries, and that can really get to be a hassle.
Oh yeah, and a lot of these workers' comp cases, they might truck along 4 or 5 years before they ever get settled.
Yes,
or get to trial, and during that time, the the client can't work, and you know they've got to go get on Social Security disability or something. And like you said, it might have been that they hurt their right hip at work, but you know they start compensating for it before you know it. They have a back injury, you know, they get a hip replacement, then they get another hip replacement, and then they're completely disabled, not necessarily from the work injury, but from dealing with it. And you know they get on, they have to get on Social Security disability because you know they're going to starve, or you know their lights are going to get turned off if they don't do something. And before you know it, you've got all these factors working into how you're going to settle this case for them.
You know, and the term disability, being totally disabled, doesn't mean that you're a fruit.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that you're laid up in a hospital bed, can't move, can't do nothing, whatever else. That means that you can't earn a 40-hour week living like someone else. You know, and there's a lot of things that's factored in that. It may be your education level, your work experience. You know, you can't just go out there and take on a job that may be a lot less physically stressed. It may have a lot less physical stress to it, but it requires skills that you don't have, some trainings that you don't have and stuff. So you're limited to what you can do. And yes, those people, you know, and as you know, that we don't make a living off of workers' comp. You get a small fee. You're really doing more for helping people out, because you're not going to make a living off doing workers' comp cases. But regardless, a lot of people we deal with are uneducated. They don't have a big job. They don't have a big skill level. They're probably making minimum wage, $9, $10, $11 hour jobs. And they get injured, and you know, they get $200-$300 a week, maybe, if they're lucky, a check, and they got to try to live off that, and it gets to be tough. You know, they can't go back to work, they can't find another job, and they're losing everything they've got. So you have to explore the avenues. Hey, is this person a candidate for you know, receiving some kind of Social Security disability benefits? Because, you know, these people making $9 or $10 an hour probably don't have some kind of disability insurance or anything to compensate them for the money that they're lost. So it can definitely get you in a mess, especially when you're trying to settle. And this person is not, you realize they're never going to be able to go out and work 40 hours a week. They can't do the physical manual labor because of their backs or shoulders or whatever else. They can't do the stuff. So it's going to be a long-term deal. And they're entitled to some compensation. And then you start trying to figure out, well, how am I going to be able to get this person a little bit of a chunk of money so they can kind of hopefully pay off an automobile or pay towards a house or whatever else, and then allow them to get the maximum amount of money that they're entitled to on disability benefits. And sometimes I have to tell them, look, you need to take less, because the more money you take, you're going to lose money on disability benefits.
Right.
And it gets to be a math, mm-hmm. math issue then.
Yeah, we mediated a case last year, and it was a case that was 5 years old. And in the meantime, from the time the guy was hurt at work, he had to get on Social Security disability, is, you know, starving. He was losing everything he owned. And it came time to mediate it, and we had to deal with, you know, Medicare set aside. We had to deal with, you know, what the Social Security offset's going to be, and what's the optimal number to give him as much in his pocket that we could spread out over the rest of his life, you know, as far as the final order goes, that wouldn't kill his monthly award, because he needed that money coming in every month. And
needed health benefits from Medicare.
Right. And, you know, we might could have settled it a lot faster and just gave him a bunch of money. But, you know, who knows 5 years from now if he, you know, where that money's going to be, and he's not going to be getting his Social Security. And, you know, and it's like you say, it's sometimes just comes down to being a big math problem.
Yes. And the them set aside funds get to be big numbers too. Them are some massive hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh yeah,
that set aside that you end up getting to a person, and you know, you have to tell them, hey, this is just for your work related injury stuff, you know, and you got to be wise about spending this money, and you're accountable for it. You know, Medicare can come in anytime they want to and audit you, and
right,
and they'll cut off your benefits if you if they feel like you know wasting the money, mm-hmm, as far as paying for whatever that injury is. And
mm-hmm, and you know, I had somebody come in a couple months ago, and he had a workers' comp settlement from 1992, and the insurance company was trying to buy him out of his future medicals, and was saying, well, we'll give you, you know, X amount of dollars to close out your future medicals and put it in a Medicare set aside. And he was kind of excited, but you know, it's when I started explaining to him the pitfalls of doing that, and you know, this may not be enough money if you have to have, yeah, a back surgery or whatever. And it's there's always a lot to consider when you start dealing with Medicare and future medicals and those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, the so let's go over just a few basic things. If you're a person that's injured on the job, and that injury can sometimes be illnesses. I mean, it can be a carpal tunnel. Sometimes it can be stress-related illness, heart illnesses, or whatever else. If something happens to you on the job and it affects your ability, and it's done during your employment time while you're at the job, while you're doing your job, then it is. It will fall under a workers' compensation case. It should, okay? And the benefits, the three different types of benefits you're entitled to, like you said, is the medical benefits, which the good thing about them is that's for life. So right, for the rest of your life, if you can prove that some kind of medical treatment in the future is related to your work-related injury, then the company has to pay for it. They have to provide you those medical benefits. And as you said, right, there's sometimes people sell them.
Right.
That, you know, in some instances that's good, some instances that's bad. There's no one, I don't know, I've never found one formula where you say, hey, you need to.
Right.
You know.
It's like, you know, usually when you go to settle a case, the company comes back with two numbers when it gets time to get close to settling. One of them is with medicals closed and one of them is with it being open. And, you know, in most cases, it's best to keep them open.
Yeah, it is. And, it is.
You know, it's rare that you see a time where there's enough money out there on the table to say, okay, we can close it, because you never know what your health insurance is going to pay or not pay.
And you're not, and being realistic about it, that's what I tell people. If you get this $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 to cover your future medicals, that money's not going to go to an account for your future medicals. That money's
right,
going to
right,
go. You're going to buy a new car, a new TV, new whatever else. Well, that's what, mm-hmm, that money gets gone real fast. And then these people get in a bind. Their insurance is not paying for it.
Right.
Medicare's not going to pay for it. And then, you know, you just end up suffering with whatever type of injury you got. So that's your medical benefits coverage. The other one is the indemnity benefits, the compensation benefits, and that money, unlike any other personal injury type cases, you don't get paid for pain and suffering. You get paid for the amount of disability, how your injury affects your ability to earn a living.
Right, right, and it can be set out, you know, in all different kinds of ways. As gruesome as it sounds, you know. You know, your arm's worth so many weeks,
yes.
And that's how you get paid. And yeah. and when it comes to losing a disability to your whole body, and you talk about percentages, then it's limited in weeks. And if it's not, if it's 100% disability, then you know it goes to your life expectancy in,
yes,
weeks. And it's another math problem, and,
yes,
and it's all set out by law.
Yep, we have the scheduled injury. That's what I was, mm-hmm, trying to get the right word. They have scheduled, right, injury and non-scheduled injuries. Pretty well, any of your extremities, your hands, your fingers, your arms, your eyes, your sight, your hearing, your legs, your feet, knees, all that stuff is, like you said, is a scheduled injury. They actually have it scheduled, and they say, hey, if you is it a legs, 220 weeks maybe? I can't remember,
right,
what it is.
Something
like that. 220, 170. Something's 170. I don't know. But if you was to actually either lose your leg, or if you lose functioning capacity of your leg, it's set out in the law how many weeks of compensation it is. So you take however much money your average weekly wage is, 66 2/3 of that, and multiply it times that week, and that's it. So for instance, you're earning $100 a week, let's just keep it simple, then you're going to get $66 of that average weekly wage for 200 weeks. You get, what, $33,000, $32,000 for losing your leg.
Right.
Which is not a lot of money, of course, no. But that's it. You know, you get that, and then you get your future medical treatment from it, and that's it. So, like I said, they've got it for lose a hand. Let me see, lose a one arm and one hand, one arm on one hand, and one arm and one foot or something. Yeah. They got all different ways. You can lose one finger, two fingers, or thumbs, and
if it's not past the second knuckle, it's only half a finger.
Yes, all that stuff. Yes. So them are mass that set out math equations. Them are probably the easier cases. Usually, when I have a client that comes in that's got, they've got a shoulder, the problem gets to be is like when you get to the joints, you get a shoulder injury.
Right.
Well, then a lot of times the insurance company wants to say, well, that's an arm injury. And I want to say, no, that's an injury to someone's torso. That's not out there in their arm. That affects their body, because sometimes you get more money. You get 300 weeks of compensation versus whatever limitation they have on the arms and the hands for workers' comp. And that gets to be, you know, that may be the difference in $10,000 and $27,000, you know, and as you know, what we do as lawyers is try to find somewhere in between where we can get them $20,000. Everybody's kind of halfway happy. Nobody's really happy, but they get their case and move on. But, you know, I would imagine that I see, and probably what you see is the back injuries. That's probably the biggest ones. The knees and shoulders and stuff, and most of them is going to be the back injury. Somebody's lifting something, twisting, doing something that's messed them up. And, of course, the insurance companies want to call it a back strain. And no matter if you can have a herniated disc, they still want to say it's just a back strain and try to treat it like a back strain and send you back to work. And then that gets to be really where the fight and some of these cases gets to be is your compensation, how much money that you're entitled to. then the other things we talked about, the medical benefits for life you always get. You got however your injury affects your ability to earn a living. And then you got, we actually have something, the third part is vocational benefits. So now you can, there's a way you can get some money for you can either be retrained to for another occupation, or there's a formula for trying to figure out how much money to give you for how it affects your ability to earn, how your injury affects your ability in future earning capacity. And really, I don't know how you handle it. Them kind of things, usually I try to double what their bodily injury thing is, or three times it or whatever else, and throw a number out there and say, hey, this covers both of them. Try to get a number that everybody's agreed with and go on. But
right. You know, one of the good things about, you know, you point out those vocational benefits is when people settle their case on their own with their employer, lots of times they'll get a letter from the adjuster in the mail and says, okay, we're going to give you this check for $11,000. And, you know, they'll come in, they'll bring that letter to me, and I'll figure up the numbers. And I'm like, well, that's exactly what you would get, you know, for your compensation for your loss. You know, there's this vocational benefit's not even calculated in
exactly.
There, and they'll leave that out.
They will never, I've never seen them where they pay a vocation. You know, they may, if it's a small injury and you're entitled to $1,000, $2,000 or something like that, they may throw an extra little $500 in there to make it to sweeten the pot a little bit. But I've never seen them where they take into consideration what your vocational, how it affects your ability to earn.
Right.
You know, because once you settle these cases, you're done. I mean, you settle this case 5 years down the road, your back starts messing up, and you start missing work for 2 or 3 months. You can't go back to the employer and say, "Hey, I need some more money." So.
Right.
I think it's break time. We'll take us a little bit short break, and then we'll finish this conversation on the other side.
We've spent a lot of time on this. The investigation is finally over. we uncovered several leads, and we have finally found it. We have found what every small business in Coleman has been looking for. Fiber optic quality internet is here. Utilizing cutting-edge radio technology, Cyber Broadband is now able to offer fiber optic quality internet in the immediate downtown Coleman area and most Coleman industrial parks. More information is available by calling Cyber Broadband 256-734-1077, 256-734-1077, or on the web at cyberbroadband.net. You've thought about it. You've talked about it. You've even stared into the mirror dreaming about it. Well, now is the time, and Coleman SportsFit is the place to get that body you've been wanting. Shaping Coleman since 1989, Coleman SportsFit offers free weights and Cybex machines, treadmills, stair steppers, ellipticals, and an indoor track. Want to get wet? Take a swim in the indoor pool, whirlpool, or steam room. Coleman SportsFit offers a variety of fun group classes too, like spinning, muscle pump, Zumba, cardio sculpt, or dance fit. Plus, Coleman SportsFit has the area's only racquetball courts. And for seniors, Coleman SportsFit is a proud provider of Silver Sneakers and SilverFit, a seniors-only exercise plan at little or no cost. Coleman SportsFit Wellness Center, Highway 31 next to the Ag Center. For more information, visit ColemanSportsFit.com. Attention Coleman business owners. You are the people we want to hear from. All of us here at Live 95 want to take a moment to remind you of what life was like before Live 95. Yeah, so we don't want to go back to that. This is just a friendly reminder that Live 95 can help you. If you're a new business just getting started, or a well-established large business, Live 95 can actually help you get tax breaks on your tax bill. Woo-hoo! Hey, we're not kidding. Seriously. Send us an email at studio@live95coleman.com today. Or visit our website, live95coleman.com, and click on support to find out more right now. Do it. Thanks for listening to Live 95. We're Coleman's independent radio. Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to segment number two. I got to wake up. I guess the late ball game tonight, or all weekend long, kind of got me messed up. But it's Melvin Hastings here with Mr. Jerry Kilgo, discussing a little bit of workers' compensation, Social Security type law, kind of how they intertwine and how it affects these people. I guess one of the more important things we need to talk about is how does someone file a workers' comp claim? You know, kind of go through that a little bit about how important it is. First of all, the notification, that's the key, and that's some problems I've had on two or three different cases that I've had to try on these workers' comp cases, where they start, the employer alleges, hey, we weren't notified properly of the injury, and then they try to defend against the injury, so they don't have to pay anything for the injury. Yeah. But if someone's injured on the job, what do you suggest?
I mean, the first thing that they need to do is report it. You know, report it to their supervisor, and if there's a way they can report it in writing, that's best. You know, the case law has said that a verbal report is good enough. But you know, like you said, those are the cases that sometimes you end up trying, because it turns into, well, I wasn't told, and you know, your client saying, well, I know I told him, and they told me there wasn't nothing they could do about it, or who knows what they told them. And like you said, those are the cases that end up getting tried. And you know, the first thing when someone comes in and talks to me about a workplace injury, you know, I asked them if they received anything. Did they receive a first report of injury, a copy of that where the employer reported it to the state, and, you know, and go from there. And if they haven't made, if they haven't received anything, then, you know, I go and make the report myself in writing for them.
Yes, that is a, and that's what I tell my clients, and that's, I think that's what everybody needs to know. If you are on the job, and if your employer is required to provide workers' compensation benefits, which probably 99% of the employers do, I mean, our law offices wouldn't be required to carry workers' compensation because the amount of employees you got to have, what, five? I think five employees to that you, when it's mandatory that you have it. But most jobs that people work for, if they, you know, there's at least five employees there, unless it's a farmer, and I think there's a few little things that's excluded from workers' comp. Most employers are required to carry some type of workers' compensation benefits. If you are working for some type of an employer and he or she is required to carry workers' compensation benefits and they don't, then you get what, double, isn't that what it is, I believe it is?
That's right.
You get double the benefits. If you can collect the money from them, I guess would be another issue there. But yeah, you do it in writing. Unfortunately, most of the time when people come see me, it's 3 or 4 or 5 months after the fact. Or maybe a year after the fact, they receive some checks. Now they're having problems trying to settle the case. There's issues going on. Then you got to go back to square one. All right, did you report the injury? Who'd you report it to? Was it supervisor? And hopefully they did it in writing. And then, like you said, I want to know about that first report of injury. And so if you're on the job and you're injured, you know, it could be a finger that's cut or cut off or whatever else. I mean, go get your medical treatment, of course, but just as soon as possible, once you get fixed, the emergency situation fixed, you need to go to your supervisor, your human resources person, whatever else, and say, I need to fill out that first report of injury. I believe the employee signs it, don't he? I don't know. He may or may. I know the employer does.
Right.
But, you know, they have to. They are required by law to report that. They have to report work-related injuries. If they don't report it, then that ought to be a red flag to you that they are going to treat this like not a work-related injury.
That's exactly right.
You know, and the Department of Industrial Relations is the state organization that handles the workers' compensation in Alabama. So, yeah, you can call. I mean, they're really helpful. You can call them, tell them what's going on in the situation, and I've called them myself, and they'll pick up the phone. Next thing you know, you'll be getting a phone call from the insurance adjuster saying, oh, I'm sorry, we didn't realize there's a problem.
Right.
Because they've then got the phone call from the industrial relations asking what's going on, why was this injury not reported. So the first one is making sure that it's reported. You know, about getting the treatment, you know, about your physicians. You can talk to us a little bit about the physicians and who you got to go to and the medical providers.
They're going to send you to their doctor, the company doctor, you know, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, and part of the rules that the employees have to follow is you do have to treat with their providers, and because these are providers that accept the insurance that your employer has purchased, and they're in the network or whatever. If you go and you say, well, I don't like going to this doctor, you know, he's on the company side, I'm gonna go see my own doctor, you know, you could ruin your entire claim. And
yes.
and then on top of that, if you say you go to your own doctor and your doctor bills your Blue Cross and Blue Shield, well, Blue Cross and Blue Shield's gonna get wind of how you got this injury, and then they're gonna send a subrogation letter, and then they're gonna say, well, you know what, this ain't even ours. We're just gonna pull our money back.
Yes.
And, you know, but you have some rights. If you don't like the company doctor, you can ask for a panel, and it's called a panel of four, and you can pick a different doctor, and you don't have to continue going to this doctor. And if you want a second opinion, you can request a panel and go see another doctor.
That's a one-time deal, isn't it?
It's a one-time deal per whatever. If it's a specialist,
yes.
you know, if it's just the first doctor you see, but it's one time per whatever you're seeing them for.
Yes.
You know? And You know, and that's what I tell people. If you don't like their opinion, then, you know, let's get a panel and, you know, let you pick a doctor. It's still their doctor. And
yes.
It's still a doctor that works under the terms of that your employer's insurance. But, you know, it is one of the rights that you do have.
Yes. And the let's talk a little bit about the – because I think some people – I've had – you know, we always have people come and want free legal advice, and I give a ton of free legal advice every day. But, you know, there's a lot of people wants to come talk to me about a workers' comp claim and try to get an idea about it. Let me educate them a little bit about the law. And then they won't handle it themselves because they feel like, hey, I got enough about this. I can handle this case myself and keep all the money. I don't have to pay the lawyer nothing. You know, it is set up by statute what our compensation is for handling these cases, and that is 15%, which right. is absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, if a person recovered $10,000, if I recovered $10,000 for someone on a workers' comp claim, I get paid $1,500. Right. Well, there's a lot of people says, hey, I'd like to get paid $1,500. Well, there is no telling how many hours I spend. Mm-hmm. Trying to get my $1,500. I mean, it is a ton of hours. It is a lot of work to do. You know, you get your expenses, but, you know, a lot of times I have to take depositions of doctors. You have to pay things up front and get medical records. You know, you can have $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 in a case of my own money in a workers' comp case right off. So that $1,500 is not a lot of money. So I'm telling you this for a reason. I make more money off of these people coming back and seeing me from a wreck case or seeing me from some other matter because I helped them out in their workers' comp case. We don't make a living off workers' comp case, but it is a very – you can get yourself in a mess if you don't know what you're doing with the workers' comp stuff. I mean, you can get yourself into buying. For instance, the issue that you talked about going to your own physician, I had a case – With a girl that's injured, unfortunately, she's injured at Walmart, and they're gonna fight you no matter what. I mean, they're not gonna do it. They're gonna try. I mean, you can be working there and carrying your arm out, and they're gonna say he wasn't injured on the job. He did it.
Right.
He came to work that way or something. But anyway, they'll fight you tooth and nail on these cases, and so they sent her to a doctor, then they's trying to get this physician to say that she wasn't injured on the job, even though she was carried out of the plant. Well, she made the mistake of going to her own personal physician. Well, she realized that Blue Cross, which is the insurance by Walmart that she worked for, was paying for it, that they weren't going to pay for it if it's a workers' comp injury, So when she started filling out her papers and it says, was this work-related injury, she put no on there. And then just went on, and it was rocking on. 2 years later, she comes to talk to me because she's not getting any money from Walmart, and everybody's is giving her a hard time. And then as we file this lawsuit and get involved in this case, lo and behold, there comes the medical records when she went to her own personal doctor saying, Mark, no, this is not a work-related injury. And here we are filing a workers' comp claim.
Right.
So sometimes people try to outsmart the company, insurance companies and stuff, and make the mistakes. That's why if you're injured on the job and if you have a serious injury that affects your ability to work, you really need to go talk to some lawyer about it. Know your rights. Understand what's going on. And like I said, it's not like he's entitled. He's not going to get half your money, 30% of your money or whatever else. You're going to get a ton. You're going to get a lot more money. I mean, I've had people come in and see me that's get letters for $1,500, $1,600 that the company's trying to settle with them for. I get them $10,000, and at the end of the day, I write them a check for $7,000 or $8,000. So they could have settled for themselves, got $2,000, or they could come see an attorney and got $8,000 out of it. So you're never going to get. I don't know of any situation where you can benefit by trying to handle this claim yourself, because you're going the medical benefits, you can waive them, sign them off, probably shouldn't have done it. Like you said, right. You lose the vocational benefits. There's a lot to it that you too much stuff that you can mess up that you don't get it.
Mm-hmm. And if you're in the middle of treating and you're getting temporary benefits, and you know, it just takes, you know, filling out a form the wrong way, saying the wrong thing to an adjuster, going to the wrong doctor, going to your doctor for something else and getting treated for your workplace injury, and you can lose all those benefits.
Yes.
And, you know, it's, and the worst part about that is, you know, you go to your doctor, you go get some treatment, Blue Cross Blue Shield pulls their money back when now you owe your doctor some money.
Yes.
And, you know, you've got all these, you know, you could be getting sued in small claims court for medical bills. Who knows?
Yeah. The another kind of try to make sure we don't skip around way too much, but you know, the notification is number one. That is the most important thing you got to do. You have to report it to your supervisor. You need to do it in writing. I mean the verbal's fine, like you said, but you need to do it in writing. Keep your copy of it. Make sure you got that first report of injury, because once they send that first report of injury in, then they're more or less admitting there's a workers' comp claim here. There's an injury that happened on the job. So once you get it in, then that's fine. It's kind of smooth sailing from then. You still got to go through the treatment. Most of the time, I don't know that I've handled hundreds of workers' comp claims, probably 100 or 200, 300 of them. But I don't know of any time where they've not paid the people right. I'm talking about, if you're off work, you miss some work, they're going to get you your 66 2/3. I mean, if it does, it's pretty rare. Most of the time, the money that you're talking about that you need the attorney for is the end result. How much are you getting, you know, in the end?
Right.
That's your future money. Hey, something happens to you once you settle that claim. That's it. You know, if you miss work again because of this injury, you're just out of luck.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we are the most helpful in the cases is on the future compensation, the medical, protecting your medical benefits, and, you know, because they're going to try to settle you if it's not a clear cut permanent total disability. They're going to try to settle you at a low number. If it's not a scheduled injury, you know, they're going to have someone come back and say, oh, he's got an 8% disability to the whole body. And, you know, and we have experts that we use at our office vocational experts that are well versed in the law and, you know, do, you know, thousands of these evaluations every year. And, you know, they can look over an evaluation from a comp provider and tell me in 5 minutes, you know, send this guy to me, you know.
Yes.
You know, he's hurt a lot more than that, or can say, you know, I know what his records are saying right now, but, you know, he needs a second opinion on that.
Yes.
Back.
Yes.
It's not just a herniated disc.
Yes. You know, and another thing I've really learned, I haven't really thought about is the medicine, how it affects. You know, if you got a back pain or whatever else, and you have to take a lower tab every day or two or three lower tabs during the daytime, when you're working, how much that affects you and your ability to carry on a job, how much it affects your ability to concentrate. There's a lot of jobs that you're just not going to get.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and yeah, that's where the vocational people, which are getting harder to find, but the vocational experts are critical. They come in, take your education experience, your work experience, your injuries, your medicines. They take all of it in account, and they can come up and say, hey, there's this percent of jobs that this person would not be eligible for. They can apply all day long, and they're never going to get this type of job. That is their impairment of their future earning capacity. And, you know, that's just another number that we throw out there. Hey, you know, I like them vocational experts that throws the 70s and 80% out there, not always 100%. Throw the 70s and 80s out there on someone with some kind of a back injury. The insurance company's not going to accept it, but hey, that may be the difference in a 20% settlement and a 30% settlement,
right,
or a 5% settlement or whatever else. So them numbers are real important. And these percentages that we're talking about is part of the math equation. That's kind of how you get your final number and where it goes to. The another important aspect is talking about maximum medical improvement. You know, how long you got to go to the physician? When does that physician say you're done? What kind of a treatment? You know, once that physician says, "Hey, this is it, maximum medical improvement. There's nothing else I can do to make them any better." That number is an important number. The court's not just bound by it. Most courts probably do accept it pretty well, but that is an important number in that math equation. So we'll discuss a little bit more things about functional capacity and a couple more things about workers' comp. If anybody has any questions, our number is 256-737-9505. We'll take another break and finish this thing off.
Let's face it, we all want to look our best, but with minimal effort, right? Well, that's where Angela at Scissor Salon comes in. She'll get you looking your best so you're always on top of your game. Walk-ins are always welcome. Scissor Salon, Highway 278 East, just past the water plant, 735-3089, 735-3089. Look for the big scissors on the roof.
Are you having trouble seeing your computer screen? Are the traffic signs looking a little fuzzy? Are the things that you used to be able to see looking just a little out of focus? Dr. Wayne Fuller has been helping Coleman see better for years, and he's still located on 2nd Avenue between the Catholic Church and Highway 278. You can call his friendly staff at 256-734-1121, and they'll be happy to get you seeing better, whether it's with contacts, glasses designed just for you, or a low-cost alternative to LASIK. Again, Dr. Wayne Fuller is available at 256-734-1121.
Attention Coleman business owners. You are the people we want to hear from. All of us here at Live 95 want to take a moment to remind you of what life was like before Live 95. Yeah, so we don't want to go back to that. This is just a friendly reminder that Live 95 can help you. If you're a new business just getting started, or a well-established large business, Live 95 can actually help you get tax breaks on your tax bill. Woo-hoo! Hey, we're not kidding, seriously. Send us an email at studio@live95coleman.com today, or visit our website, live95coleman.com, and click on support to find out more right now. Do it. Thanks for listening to Live 95. We're Coleman's independent radio. Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back. This is Melvin Hastings here with my special guest, Mr. Jerry Kilgo of the firm of O'Neill and Kilgo here in Coleman. Was discussing a little bit of the workers' comp, actually a lot of workers' comp, and I kind of thought, man, I need two or three topics. Workers' comp's not going to take up a whole hour, but it's has a lot to it.
Yeah.
Has a lot of law to it, and you know, another important aspect that you did while we're on a break that you brought up is time, as far as getting your benefits in. The workers' comp is just like any other type of a personal injury claim. All of them that I know of is got a 2-year statute. It runs in 2 years. So if you have a claim, if you got 2 years to file it. If you don't file it in circuit court within 2 years, then you lose it. I mean, you can lose your ability to get any money or get any relief on a workers' comp claim. So there's a little bit of difference in this than other lawsuits. It runs two years from the date of injury or two years from the date of the last payment of indemnity benefits. Isn't that right? Yes.
Right.
You know, and that is important. And that's kind of what made me realize it when someone was talking about when you was discussing that a client that you had where they was getting paid, and or someone, whoever their employer was, trying to give them a little bit of money along and pay them whatever else, but they never filed the first report of injury or did anything right to treat it like a workers' comp claim. More than likely, I'm assuming, hoping that 2 years would run, that person would be out of luck then, wouldn't they?
Yeah, she'd be out of luck if her 2 years ran, and I don't know what the employer's intentions were, but his intentions was not to make a workers' comp claim.
Yes. The and another thing, let's go back this 2 years because it's real important. I think that's one thing. Thank God that we had some smart people in the legislature that realized that, hey, you know, you could, when they fix the 2 year statute after the last payment, because as you just said, you know, there's some of these workers' comp cases goes on 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so you're injured on a job January 1st, 2018. They pay you through December the 31st, 2020. And then come January 15th, 2021, 3 years later, they say, well, we're not going to pay you no more. Well, then, you know, if they left the statute, hey, you had 2 years from the date of injury, then you're out of luck. You can, you know, they drug you along, whatever else. But the legislature, somebody was smart enough to realize, no, we need to fix the statute so that doesn't happen. So they don't pay them, let the statute run, and then quit paying these people and treat them like it's not a work-related injury. So, and that is a life-saving deal, because I have had people come in and said, hey, I was injured 2.5 years ago, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. Then my next question is, did you get paid? Mm-hmm. How many times did you get paid, and, you know, when did it stop? You got to get the insurance company to send you a copy of that check, you know, because I always want a copy of the check in my hand. What was the last check that you received? Yeah,
when was the last temporary benefits they got?
Yes, yep. And the... I mentioned the word functional capacity exam. Sometimes most of the time I think it's what physical therapists or occupational therapists that do these. Something that you make and look it up, Google it, I guess, if you could remember it. But most people don't know it. The general layperson don't know anything about it. I don't even know if I learned that much about it even in law school. Only when I got involved in these cases that I learned about it. But that's actually a test that they can give you, and it's a workout. I mean, they're going to test you living, you're lifting, you're standing, you're kneeling and twisting and everything else. And this physical therapist or occupational therapist they will comprise all this stuff. They'll send it to a physician, and almost to a T, every single physician accepts it and says, all right, that's your rate. And a lot of times that affects that impairment rating that the physician gives you. You know, plus it also affects the amount affects the limitations that sometimes he puts on you. You know, the physician may say, hey, I didn't realize that. Hey, I looked at this functional capacity exam, and yeah, this person, they can only lift 25 pounds. They can only squat so long, or can't climb, or whatever else. You know, they set limitations on there. And that stuff is all combined into this formula that we just throw out some number and say, hey, let's settle for this case for this amount of money because of this reason.
And I think you see that a lot, like you said, that the occupational therapist will send his report to the physician, and the physician, you know, I see it more times than not that impairment rating, it's identical to the same yes. number that the occupational therapist come up and say 10%. The physician's not going to take into consideration the workers' education, the jobs that are available in this market, and those kind of things. And you know, not, I think sometimes that's the difference that we can make for somebody whenever we hire a vocational expert that's going to take into account more than just, you know, what your range of motion is on your right arm when it comes to your disability rating.
Yeah, most of the time that physician is looking, hey, did I do surgery? Did I not do surgery? Mm-hmm. What does that book say? And, right. and he's done got it in his head, it's going to be 5%, 10%, 7%, 7.5%, whatever else. It's usually intervals of 2.5s or 5s is how they do it. So right. so that functional capacity exam, although it is expensive, $600, $700, I've paid that a few times, it can be very important. I mean, it can be the difference in $10,000-$15,000 in getting somebody compensation for what they're entitled to for getting injured on the job.
Right.
And I think we've probably another thing with these type of cases that's kind of different than personal injury cases. Most of the time, the employers and it's probably good for us. We get court approval for these cases. So if you go through a workers' comp claim, you've got an attorney on it. Even if you don't have an attorney, but you probably most judges are going to probably suggest that you get one to make sure that you know what you're entitled to. Most time, these employers, once this case is settled, they're going to file it in the circuit court. If you haven't had to file a lawsuit, if you settled it without having to file a lawsuit, they'll file it in circuit court. Go to circuit court. Circuit court judge will hear the hear just kind of summary of what had happened, what kind of injury you experienced. Did your medical bills get paid for? You understand, you know, and then they'll go over, hey, you understand this is all the money you get and you're not getting any more money. Either your medicals are remaining open or they're closing out medicals, and then they'll get approval. Once that judge signs that paper, that's it. You're done. There's no going back and undoing that. And you was talking about mediation a minute ago, mediating the case. Did you use an ombudsman?
I've used an ombudsman before and successfully and unsuccessfully.
Yes.
I've noticed a lot of the insurance companies are starting to use ombudsman in the settlement conference instead of going to circuit court. Going to court, you know, the judges seem to be a little more protective over making sure that if someone's not represented, that they understand everything. And
yes.
And, you know, the settlement conferences that they use the ombudsman in sometimes, you know, it's just kind of a sit down, sign some papers, 5 minutes and be gone.
Yes. Well, tell us a little bit. I don't know that many people understand what an ombudsman is. Who is an ombudsman and how can they help you out in your workers' comp claim?
Well, they work for the state and their job is to make sure that the workers' compensation cases are being settled in a fair manner. They can provide mediation, one of the good things for us is if we use an ombudsman, it's on the state's dime, so it's not an expense that comes out of your final settlement. And like I said, they're also being used sometimes in settlement conferences to settle cases. Some of them are attorneys, some of them aren't. Some of them just have experience, working in the labor market.
And yes.
That's how they got there.
And every one of them are experts. That's the key. That's what I love about them. They know that's what they do. What's 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. I ain't gonna tell you how many cases they handle. Mm-hmm. They know it. They got the little round calculator thing there. They can tell you exactly how many weeks, how much money. They're all business. They come in suit and tie, and these guys are gals. They're all business. They know their law.
Right, and they've seen every imaginable case, and you know, it's like I said, you know, I've used them in mediations before, and when they settle, they're usually the fastest settling. Yes. Mediations, and because you know they can pretty much tell you how it's going to shake down if you go to trial.
Yes.
And usually when it doesn't settle, it's because the client isn't willing to take the
money.
Saying.
Yeah, they feel like they're entitled to more money, and I always have to explain to them, and the ombudsman will too say, look, this is different than a car wreck case. You don't get paid for pain and suffering. I know that you have pain and suffering every day or whatever else, but you know the workers' comp law only pays you for your injury and how it affects your ability to earn a living, and that's it.
Right.
You know, and the trade-off for workers' comp law is that we don't have to prove negligence against the employer, and people don't realize how important that is, but that is very, very, very important because the compromise when they come up workers' comp was, hey, the employer says we want to limit how much money we have to pay out so we don't have to get sued all the time, and then the employees says, all right, if we're going to do that, then we're going to have to do away with the negligence thing. You don't have to prove that, hey, that it was because of some fault of the employer that I got injured. All you got to do is say, I was on the job, I was injured, my injury was caused by the job that I was doing. And, I mean, that's it. I mean, right. Essentially, that's it. And
it also removes the contributory negligence. Yes. That if you're just doing a bad job and you get hurt, it doesn't negate your claim. As long as you're doing your job.
Exactly. You know, the employer can't come back and say, hey, you know, we trained this person, to use better techniques when they're lifting. They didn't do it and they hurt their back. It ain't our fault. You know, all of that's out. If you get an injured back while you're on the job, then it's compensable. As long as you can prove it, it's compensable. You know, and you're entitled to medical treatment and benefits. You know, another aspect that comes about that I've had to deal with is the aggravation of injuries. You know, employers accept you when you're employed as you are. You know, and these prior injuries or whatever else, they like to throw it out there, but pre-existing injuries really doesn't come into play in these things. Sometimes, and it's not all the time, it's pretty rare actually, but sometimes they do have a valid claim. Maybe this person got injured on another job, and then what you know, that back injury was injured on a job 5 years ago, and the employer now saying, hey, that ain't my fault, that's employer's fault. You know, and then you have to look at, hey, is this a new injury? Or is this a pre-existing injury, but it's been aggravated? You know, and then that gets really, really technical, trying to figure those cases out. What's the percentages and how much money's owed and who pays for what? And it gets to be a booger. So, but luckily that doesn't come around often, but that is something that is out there. So I think we've covered workers' comp, haven't we? I feel like I've been in workers' comp class.
Yes, me too.
I've enjoyed you here, Jerry. I enjoyed talking with you about this. It's a subject, like I said, you don't make a ton of money off of it, but it is an enjoyable. I've actually had a workers' comp claim myself from one of my prior employers, and I had to have an attorney, and glad I had one to help guide me through the process, make sure that I was taken care of. I think I'm gonna end on this because this is a common thing, and I'm sure you see it too. Every once in a while, you get these people walk in that's had this work-related injury. They've been settled their case, whatever else, and here they are, and every one of them's back pain. They're starting to have trouble with their legs and their back again. And their employer saying, hey, that's not related to your work, that's a new injury. I guess it'd be a whole new ball game.
Yeah.
That 15%, that money, everything's gone. You kind of taking a case that you ain't gonna make any money on, that you're really just trying to help someone out, and sometimes writing a letter helps out. Sometimes just giving the people some advice on what they need to do on those cases. But, you know, unfortunately, once you settle these cases and it's done, the payment's over with, the attorney fees is paid out, and sometimes you have to deal with footing the bill yourself, you know, having an attorney to help you out, especially if you really have to litigate it. Sometimes in them situations, I start looking at, hey, all right, is this something that we need to close it? Do we need to explore closing the medicals out in this case? Because if they're doing it now, 10 years from now, they're going to continue doing it. But we've got to make sure, you got to look, like you said, you got to look at the Medicare aspect of it. Has Medicaid paid any money? Blue Cross paid any money on this claim? Do you have insurance coverage that's going to cover this later on? Mm-hmm. If you have injuries, and it gets to be a whole new ball game.
Yeah. Do you have Social Security? You know, how are they going to see this money? Are they going to see it as medical money if you settle it, or are they going to see it as income?
Yes. So if you're injured on the job, make sure you tell your supervisor, and then within way before 2 years over, don't bring it in the last day. Make sure you go talk to your attorney. O'Neill and Kilgo handles cases. I handle the cases. There's quite a few attorneys around. Well, there's a few attorneys around Coleman that handles these workers' comp cases. And if they don't handle them personally, they'll probably send them to Josh or Jerry or me or someone, and we'll try to do the best we can with them. Thank you very much, Jerry, for being on with us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me.